morning. Big crowd today. I'm wondering if Mother Sringarangi did this on purpose. First day of Kartik and the Vaishnava Academy kids to break me in a little bit more at giving classes. We're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, chapter 27. Indra and Surabhi offer prayers, verse 27. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. What's the melody on this one? Ye madvidagya jagadisha maninas. Tam vikshakale bayam asutan madam. Hidvarya margam prabhajanti apasmaya. Iha karanam apite nusasanam. Ye mad vidagya jagadisha maninas. Tvam vikshakale bayam asutan madam. Idvarya margam prabhajantya pasmaya.
Idvarya margam prabhajantya pasmaya.
Iha kalanam apite nusasanam.
Iha kalanam apite nusasanam.
Ye madvidagya jagat isamaninas. Tvam vikshakale bhayam asutan madam. Idvarya margam prabhajantya pasmaya.
Idvarya margam prabhajantya pasmaya.
Iha karanam apite nusasanam.
Iha karanam apite nusasanam.
The booth. Pasmaya.
Iha karana pite nusasanam.
Synonyms. Oh, I'm sorry, the students.
Jagadisha maninas. Vam vikshakare vayam asutan madam. Vaya margam pavajanta pasmaya. Iha karanam api tenusasanam. Iha didaja jagadisha maninas. Tam vikshakale bayam asutan madam. Itvarya margam pavajanta pasmaya. Iha karanam apite nusasana.
Wonderful, thank you. Ye, those who, matvidha, like me, agyaha, foolish persons, Jagatisha, as lords of the universe. Manina, falsely identifying themselves. Tvam, you. Viksha, seeing. Kale, at time of fear. Abhayam, fearless. Asu, quickly. Tat, there. Madam, false pride. Hitva, abandoning. Prabhajanti, they take too fully. Apasmayaha, free of pride. Iha, the activity. Kalanam, of the wicked. Api, indeed. Te, by you. Anusasanam, sorry. Anusasanam, the instruction. Translation. Even fools like me, who proudly think themselves universal lords, quickly give up their conceit and directly take to the path of the spiritually progressive when they see you are fearless even in the face of time. Thus you punish the mischievous only to instruct them. We can repeat together. Even fools like me, purport. History is filled with examples of the supreme authority breaking the conceit of foolish men. Modern world leaders proudly fight one another, placing the common people in unprecedented jeopardy. Similarly, Indra, proud of his apparently illustrious position, dared to threaten the lives of the innocent residents of Vrindavan with terrible weapons, until his arrogance was curbed by the dynamic response of the Supreme Lord. Nowadays, governments in the Western countries tend to be elected democratically, and thus the mass of people become identified with the destiny of their leaders. When the proud leaders engage in violence, the people who elected them bear the brunt of such belligerent decisions. Thus, the people in the democratic nations of the world should elect Krishna conscious leaders who will establish an administration consonant with the laws of God. If they fail to do so, their materialistic leaders, oblivious of the will of the Supreme Lord, will undoubtedly be chastised by cataclysmic events, and the people who elected such leaders, being responsible for their leaders' acts, will share in the suffering. It is ironic that in modern democracies, not only do the leaders consider themselves universal controllers, but the mass of people considering the leaders merely their representatives rather than the representatives of God also consider themselves as a people to be the controllers of their nation. Thus, the chastisement mentioned in this verse has become unprecedentedly applicable to people in general in the modern world. Modern man should not simply make himself a lesson of nature by falling down from his proud position. Rather, he should submissively execute the will of the all-attractive personality of Godhead, the absolute truth, Sri Krishna, and usher in a new era of sanity, tranquility, and widespread enlightenment. Om Agyanati Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurum Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Vanchakalpatarubhyasya Kripa Sindhu Vyayevacha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So to situate this verse, as we know from the previous pastime that just happened, Lord Indra, feeling very proud because he's the king of heaven, wanted to demonstrate his powers because he was very angry when he saw that the residents of Vrindavan were worshiping Krishna instead of him. So what did Krishna do? Sarvamangala? He lifted Govardhan Hill so effortlessly, just like Indra was having a fit, right? Like if I take away your toys, sometimes you may get really mad. But what will your parents do? They just ignore you. Because if we give in to your being all upset, then you become more upset, and then you think you're taking control. So in this way, Krishna is just ignoring Indra's little fit of anger, and he just, in such an amazing way, shows his ultimate power by lifting Govardhan Hill. And now in this verse, Lord Indra is finally acknowledging that Krishna is the Supreme Lord, that he is not God, and he is coming to the conclusion that his position is not to be the Lord, but to be the servant of the Lord. When I took initiation in 2007, I took the standard vows of initiation. We vow that we're going to follow the four regulative principles, and we're going to chant 16 rounds. So when I was taking these vows, I was very confident and enthusiastic. Okay, finally, no illicit sex, no intoxication, no meat eating, no gambling. I'm going to chant my 16 rounds. But in the tradition of Radhanath Swami's initiations, there's also this other vow that we're going to strive to be the servant of Srila Prabhupada's mission. And so I remember when I was taking my initiation vows, maybe it's like the business aspect in my mind, I'm thinking, wait a minute, this is an extra vow. Is this part of the deal? I just remember that it didn't come out as easily because the idea of being the servant is actually kind of a foreign idea. For me at least. So in this verse I felt I had a nice opportunity to try to explore what is this idea of being the servant, because this is the conclusion that Lord Indra is coming to. To me, when I think of a servant, it's you have to be humble and you got to wash pots. And I don't feel very humble, and I don't like to wash pots. To grasp that we are by nature servants, it seems like a completely different realm of consciousness. Because society is telling us the opposite of that. Right? In this modern society, you have to be the best of the best. Right? You have to, you know, become famous for what you do. So this is the culture. And if you think of yourself as a servant, you're seen as being weak. Most people will think that if you're giving in to this idea that you're an eternal servant, you're losing your individuality, and that you're entering this culture where just do what God likes, even if it's contrary to what you want in your life. And it can seem very dogmatic, and people don't like that. We want things our way, just like Indra. You know, this is actually applicable to everybody in the world. We want things the way we want them. So when we think of, I'm an eternal servant, people may not want to take part in this. So the first thing we have to understand is the vocabulary that is being used, and that we shouldn't let the word stop us from understanding the concept behind the word. For example, if you're out of a job and you're looking for a position, and the only thing that's available is to be a salesman. If I say salesman, many people may think used car salesman. And that's, you know, even though some people are inclined to do that and they're good at it, a lot of people aren't. And they think, that is not for me. There's no way I can be a salesman. I don't like forcing things upon people. But the concept of a salesman can actually be applied to much more gratifying occupations. For example, another word for it could be a creative problem solver for a big company, or even being the CEO of a great corporation could fall under this umbrella of a salesman. And that can be actually very exciting. So Srila Prabhupada, he went out of his way to evolve a vocabulary that would present Krishna consciousness in a way that would reach for the highest things, the occupations, the highest desires of what people want in life. And he achieved this in a very amazing way. Hippies were giving up intoxication and illicit sex from one day to the other, and were engaging their talents very enthusiastically for Krishna's service. Another meaning of to be the servant of the servant is sangha. If you're part of a culture where we understand that to be a human being is to serve Krishna, it can be very easy. But if you're not part of such a culture, it can be very difficult. So this sangha is half of our spiritual life. This is how we actually serve each other. When we have programs and we discuss Krishna conscious philosophy and enliven one another through kirtan and prasadam and sharing each other's experiences, opening our hearts to one another, we're actually engaging in this servant of the servant attitude. So I realized as I was studying this that maybe why this additional vow seemed a little bit awkward at first is because following the four regulative principles, chanting your rounds, it's personal. It's working on yourself. But when you engage in serving, now you're entering this community aspect of Krishna consciousness. And the movement can't advance without this community. It's very important. I remember when we lived in Savannah before we moved here, there was no temple community. And our spiritual practice was very difficult. When we moved here, just by living in a community with other devotees, I realized, wow, it's not that I have to go wash pots. Just by being here, I'm encouraging others and they're encouraging me through our association. So So to be the servant certainly means to have humility and perform menial service. Lord Chaitanya was a great example. He exemplified how through his relationship with his associates he was extremely humble, and he would also perform menial service like washing their laundry and things like that. But we should also understand the deeper meaning of this identity of an eternal servant, which is that, ironically, it means that you care more about your personal well-being, and that by engaging your abilities in these most exciting ways for the ultimate cause, the highest cause of both society and yourself personally, you can actually find the greatest pleasure. Of course, Krishna, by his grace, sometimes he opens the doors, and even through menial service, we can get a glimpse of what it is to enjoy the greatest pleasure in being a servant. I have, for some reason, I love sitting in on meetings. Something, whether it's at my job or certainly at the temple, like they invited me to be a board member at the Krishna House, and I said, well, I don't know how much I can actually offer, but I'd love to sit in, because I really like to see how the background of the structure of the movement is being taken care of by the senior devotees. So anyways, one time in Atlanta, there was a strategic planning meeting, and I managed to sneak my way into that meeting just to listen by saying that I would, serve the drinks. So I remember this meeting is going on, and I put out all the waters on the table, and at one moment I saw a devotee, I think it was actually maybe Tamaharaprabhu, drinking that water that I had put on the table, and I became really emotional. Just to see that, I had this opportunity to serve a Vaishnava who was doing such an amazing service of planning Srila Prabhupada's movement. So I got a little taste of that eternal identity and happiness in serving the Vaishnavas. So to get back to Lord Indra, where does this false identity come from? Lord Indra thought that he was the Lord. And we also think that we're lords. This comes from our previous conditioning, but it also comes from our materialistic society. And its unqualified leaders. Both Lord Jesus Christ in the Bible and Prahlad Maharaj say that when the blind is leading the blind, everybody falls in the ditch. So public opinion is not very good, and accepting people's conclusions that if you have a lot of money, if you give in to your sense desires, you're going to be happy, that is feeding people into this illusion of happiness in the material world. It's the business of Maya, of illusion, to spread this material propaganda all over the news, television, radio, through society, commercials, and to defeat everyone from being God conscious. The newspapers are not so concerned, as we can see, by presenting the news for their truth, what is the motivation behind most news agencies is to just present it in whatever way is going to bring the most money. So this is very misleading. What is the difference between a honeybee and a fly? The honeybee can be in a garbage dump and it will find that one flower. But the fly can be in a flower garden and it will find that the dog stool. So similarly, the devotees are trying their very best to spread Krishna consciousness, to save the entire world from repeated birth and death, in this material world, but the news rather, they rather focus on the one celebrity that died of an overdose. So we can see that that is their motivation. They feed on the lowest common denominator. Everybody has a tendency to like gossip, to want to watch the silly television shows, and so it's easy to make money on these things. But our highest common denominator is that we're all eternal souls. And that is the purpose of the Krishna Conscious Movement, to look out after our long-term interest through spreading Krishna consciousness. So we don't want to be misled. And in order not to be misled, we have to see through the eyes of Scripture and through following the orders of a bona fide spiritual master, a guru. Krishna is everywhere, but unless we take to this process, we won't be able to see him and receive his mercy. So there's a great need, as explained in the purport, for Krishna conscious leaders. Our modern education, all of our research, our histories, they should be an example that time after time throughout history, we have failed to actually bring real happiness and peace to the world because God was not put in the center. And just like Indra, modern leaders dare to endanger the lives of innocent people by using weapons of mass destruction. Yesterday, Ramya Prabhu was discussing this temporary government shutdown. So many people, thousands, lost their jobs because of this shutdown, simply because they couldn't make a decision based on their personal desires. The different political leaders are really looking for, you know, I'm part of this social class, so I want to look out for my group, and the other wants to look out for their group. And in this way, they're misleading everybody and endangering people's lives. This is all because Krishna is not put in the center. It's very clever, I think, in the purport, how it's explained that the people who are electing these leaders are just as much chastisable, because those who are electing are also thinking, the leader is going to represent me. But actually, the social structure of politics and the leaders is meant to be that they represent God, not us. So Lord Indra says, even fools like me quickly give up their conceit, their false pride, and take to the path of the spiritually progressive. If you look in the synonyms, this word spiritually progressive is the word Arya, of devotees progressing in spiritual life. So this word Arya or Aryan, we can see clearly here the misappropriation by Adolf Hitler to take it not as the spiritually progressive, but the genetically progressive. But we understand here that the true meaning of an Aryan is one who is taking to the spiritual path. So I want to discuss a little bit, what is this spiritually progressive path and what is a real Aryan? The beginning of knowledge is that everything originates in Krishna. Whether it's medicine, our ability to remember, the air we breathe, none of these things were created in a factory. When you might notice, I was going for a bike ride the other day, and there's all these beautiful cotton fields that are growing right now. So to me, it seems so obvious. A flower that makes cotton, what else are you going to use cotton for but to make thread and make clothing? So it seems so logical that everything originates in Krishna. And the end of knowledge is that everything should be used for Krishna's service. This is beautifully symbolized in our Artik ceremony, when we offer in return to Krishna the elements of fire through the ghee lamp, light, earth through the incense, the smell of flowers, all these things. So that is the process Krishna gives us, and we give back to him in return. And that is the beautiful relationship that we have eternally. Krishna loves to serve his devotees, and we love to serve him in return. So all material knowledge is certainly very interesting and important, but it's useless if it's not used for its original purpose of serving Krishna. And this is why the Vedas were compiled. The Vedas are an immense library of several different encyclopedias, some on medicine, some on politics, some on worship, and these are all put together, compiled by Vyasadeva, who's Krishna himself, so that we understand how to use all this material knowledge for its spiritual value. There's a beautiful verse in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 5, verse number 4. Sakya yugo pritak bala pravadanti na pandita ikam apyastita samyag ubhayor vidante phalam. Only the ignorant speak of devotional service as being different from the analytical study of the material world. Those who are actually learned say that he who applies himself well to one of these paths achieves the results of both. So it's clear here that both go hand in hand. We explore what is happening without through all our different sciences in order to understand what is happening within on the level of the soul. Yes, we have so many necessities. We need our lawyers, we need our doctors, we need our workers. But for this reason, this is why Krishna has created the Varnashram system, where society can be perfectly balanced in having all these necessities satisfied in the service of Krishna. Here's a nice story I always liked about Srila Prabhupada. I think it was probably an interview, and so Prabhupada is explaining the uselessness of all this material advancement. So the interviewer is saying, so we don't need all our airplanes, the whole airline industry is useless? And Srila Prabhupada says, no, because I am riding on the airplanes, it has a purpose. Similarly, another nice example is in Chaupati, Mumbai in India, there's the Bhaktivedanta Hospital, where we have an entire hospital with professional doctors who have gone through all the standard training to become a doctor. They know how to use all the modern technology. But at the same time, in the hospital, in every room, there's pictures of Krishna, pictures of Srila Prabhupada. There's a radio playing constantly with Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, kirtans. And the doctors, when they do an operation or they're treating their patients, they say, you know, we can perfectly fix your body, but ultimately you're going to die anyway, so why don't you take the Krishna consciousness? So this word, Aryan, an Aryan is one who looks deeper into the meaning of life and comes to the conclusion of his spiritual identity and acts upon it. That is a real Aryan. It's important to keep increasing our efforts. Right? We live in this wonderful community of Alachua where it's all so peaceful and we're coming to the temple. But are we always challenging ourselves? Are we always remembering what is the greater picture that we are meant to keep in mind? Are we working on that platform of Arya, stretching the boundaries for Krishna, or are we being complacent? We should always be aware of this and not become complacent and keep challenging ourselves to stretch our boundaries. The very first word in creation. Does anybody know when Lord Brahma was born out of the lotus flower and he was totally bewildered? He didn't know where he was, so he started to meditate. What was the very first word that was spoken to him? Tapa. Tapa means sacrifice or austerity. So it's understood from the very beginning of creation that austerity is required in order to make advancement. And that makes sense, right? If you look at sportsmen, if you're, you know, a professional basketball player, how does he become so good? He has to stand in front of that hoop and throw the ball over and over and over and over until he becomes very good at it. So it's natural, if we want to achieve the highest platform of eternal happiness through our service of Krishna, we have to perform some austerity. We have to keep trying. Now, depending on our particular situation, this may not mean that we're going to be able to come to the temple every single day. Prabhupada, after all, was 70 years old when he got to the point of being able to commit both his mind and body 100% to Krishna consciousness. Before that, he had family obligations. Or maybe that's not the best way to put it. Externally speaking, if you look at his life, you know, he had that whole portion where he was a grihastha and he had to take care of his family and do his job. But on the inside, Srila Prabhupada was always 100% dedicated to Krishna. So that is what we should strive for in our austerity, is this consciousness that we are always trying to ultimately be 100% engaged in Krishna's service. And we have our different ashrams, you know, brahmachari life, you can do it fully through your activities and then on the inside, and then in grihastha life, you have to maybe compromise a little bit of the direct devotional service and perform it more internally because you have so many responsibilities. So the last point I wanted to make is at the end of the verse, Lord Indra says that Krishna punishes the mischievous only to instruct them. We know the famous verses of Bhagavad Gita, Yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata abhyutanam adharmasya tadatmanam sirajamyaham. Whenever and wherever there is a decline in religious practice, O descendants of Bharata, and a predominant rise of irreligion, At that time I descend myself. And the next verse, paritranaya sadunam vanasaya chaduskritam dharma samstapanam panartaya sambhavami yuge yuge. To deliver the pious and to annihilate the miscreants, as well as to reestablish the principles of religion, I myself appear millennium after millennium. So this punishment that Indra is talking about should be understood properly. Yesterday in class it was also discussed how Krishna, as the supreme judge, who just says, you've done good, you've done bad, you go to heaven, you go to hell, that's not very attractive. And Krishna is way more than that. But we are here because of our own doing. And if Krishna didn't allow us our free will, there would be no meaning to independence. So we should understand that all the miseries we go through, we can't blame them on Krishna. We can't say, oh, why does he allow people to be so cruel or abusive? And once we advance in our spiritual practice, we begin to understand that life is actually full of reminders and opportunities. We may think that this person has caused me damage, but actually, the more we understand what's going on behind the scenes, we understand that these are actually all opportunities for us. There's a verse in Srimad Bhagavatam that really helped my wife and I in understanding what was going on when our daughter was right after birth from the negligence of the midwife who gave birth. She developed a disability where she's completely disabled and unable to use her limbs. She has cerebral palsy. This was due to a medical malpractice. So initially we had this anger, you know, that this woman had caused, you know, this destruction of a life of a poor innocent child, and our lives are completely turned upside down because of it. But there's this wonderful verse in Srimad Bhagavatam, in the first canto, 17th chapter, verse 22, where Parikshit Maharaj, speaking to Dharma incarnated as a bull, says, "O you who are in the form of a bull, you know the truth of religion, and you are speaking according to the principle that the destination intended for the perpetrator of irreligious acts is also intended for one who identifies the perpetrator. You are no other than the personality of religion." So this was very helpful for me to understand that the vehicle of our karma has nothing to do with what we're going through. You know, these things are all due to us. So I thought this kind of ties into what Lord Indra is saying when he says that Krishna is punishing only to instruct us, because these are all opportunities for us. And by taking up the challenge, we develop all these good qualities of integrity and compassion and austerity, and we develop the abilities to actually enter into the realm of God, to go back to Godhead. So, in conclusion, we can learn from the example of Indra how to give up our false pride and come to the understanding that happiness lies in our eternal identity as servants of Krishna. Srila Prabhupada said that you cannot be free from anxiety by taking shelter of anything that is material, because everything that's material is temporary. The Bhagavad Gita explains the difference between spirit and matter. One is eternal and the other is temporary. So the more we act on the level of the temporary body, the more we'll become frustrated because we can't find shelter and happiness. Once we act on the level of the soul, our eternal self, then we start to discover the real joy of life and happiness. Spiritual life can be narrowed down to making decisions. We always have a choice in everything that we do. Either we can follow the crowd and become more and more entangled in the material world, or we can take to this path of the spiritually progressive and find real happiness. Sometimes making the proper decisions can be very heavy and very difficult, but it can also be joyful and very fulfilling when we know that we're doing the right thing for Krishna. So my prayer is that you'll all stay dedicated to your spiritual practice. Krishna always recognizes our efforts, and of course the more we associate together, like today, it was so wonderful to see so many devotees for the first day of Kartik. Everything becomes so easy the more we associate with devotees. I'll end here if there's any questions or comments. Is there a microphone?
Thank you, Nama. That was a beautiful class. Very nice. So you were talking about stretching boundaries, and I just wanted to know if you'd be kind enough to maybe give some examples. And also I find for myself that there are conditionings that are strong, and even though I'd like to change them, I don't personally have the strength, it seems, to do that on my own. So how to gain support or gain the mercy of the Lord and the devotees somehow to like overcome some of those things that I'm endeavoring to do.
Mm-hmm. I know what you're meaning about the conditioning that is so strong. So many times I'll tell my wife, "I know this is what I'm supposed to do, but I'm just not going to do it." It's so hard sometimes to do the right thing. When it comes to that, I think, like I said, the best way is to just associate with devotees as much as possible, because when it's when it's the norm, it's so easy. You know, just like if you're trying to chant in a material environment, it can be so much harder than if you come and chant at the temple. What was the first thing you had asked? Oh, yes. I remember when I was, and for the first few years at my job as a pilot, I was on what's called reserve, which means that you're a standby pilot. You know, if someone calls in sick or if there's some change in schedule. So they have a certain percentage of reserve pilots. And for when I was on reserve, I had to be in Atlanta. So I just stayed at the temple. That was kind of my transcendental crash pad. And so I had an opportunity to be a little bit involved at the temple over there in Atlanta. And I had started this club. I called it the One Book a Week Club. Because Vaisheshika, I don't know if it was Vaisheshika Prabhu or another top book distributor had come and given a lecture on book distribution and really pumped me up. And though I was never into, you know, go out on the streets or distributing books, but so I started this club based on his recommendation that, you know, everyone can distribute one book a week if you commit to that. And so I put together this whole presentation with a couple of other devotees. We had done this reenactment of kind of in a funny way of distributing books on the streets and the different reactions you might get. And so I started doing it myself, which I never wanted to do that. I don't like doing it. I don't do it anymore. But for a period of time, maybe a month or two, I was, you know, if I was on an overnight with my job, I would go to a park with a few small books, and there I was in the middle of the intersection of the little pathways. Hey, you heard of George Harrison, the Beatles, or here's a book by, you know, the conversation of George Harrison with Prabhupada, or whatever, you know, totally unprofessional way I figured out doing it. But I actually had a few really amazing experiences where, you know, there was this one homeless guy I met, and he was in tears, you know, pouring out his life story to me and thanking me so much for giving him this book. He said, you're sent by God, and he wrote me a prayer to keep, and it was beautiful. So by stretching our boundaries like this, you know, we always, always get Krishna's reciprocation. That's something that I've experienced, that when you really put yourself out there, we all know when we're seriously putting ourselves out there for Krishna or where we're only halfway doing it. And when you do it fully, when you fully surrender in whatever way, you definitely get Krishna's reciprocation. Any other questions or comments? Chirikram Prabhu?
So another way of stretching the boundaries is like this morning, for example, we have so many people coming. So if we contemplate maybe just coming for Kartik or Janamashmi or something, let me make it two or three times a week to the temple. See, especially for those that have time, you know, then that's a nice way of stretching it. Maybe sometimes I can even come for Mangal Arati a day or two. I can sit down and try to chant out my wrongs in the morning. These are nice ways.
Absolutely. Like I was saying earlier, even if you don't do it for yourself, do it for other devotees as a service. Because the more this temple room is crowded, the more enthusiastic we all are, and the more ecstatic the kirtan becomes, and the more we're able to actually focus on a class, to feel like, wow, everybody is here, everybody is listening. So, yes, thank you, I appreciate that, and everybody appreciates when we all come together. Yes.
Material knowledge and, you know, becoming powerful because of that. It was interesting. I was just reading something that was saying that even, you know, with just say with all the material knowledge you require, you become proud, then all of that knowledge is useless. And then just the word you said, in the same with spiritual knowledge, if you cultivated all the spiritual knowledge, you know, if it's from even like Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita, and it makes you proud, then not that the knowledge is useless, but the way that you have got it become is useless because you've become proud. So how do you remain humble by acquiring such knowledge? Because when you acquire spiritual knowledge, you begin to see things how they are. So then you can start to see a little bit, you know, the modes of nature acting on you, the false ego, the intelligence, when your false ego is just reacting, and then you can begin to see maybe on the people around you, so you start to see things kind of like how they are. You know,
right.
Like Prabhupada says, promote a goodness, then soon and sattva comes. So how, when applying the knowledge, when your eyes begin to open more, how do you remain, you know, humble?
You can think that this knowledge is not for you. You can use this knowledge to enliven other people, and that's why you're acquiring the knowledge. It's not for your own aggrandizement, that I understand it. The more we can find such, you know, greater satisfaction in enlivening other people. So when we use this knowledge in this way, we can find a taste, I think, to not focus so much on ourselves. You know, usually when we become proud, it's because we're thinking about ourselves. I'll give you a perfect example with myself. I love playing rock music, you know, and I used to play in bands in high school and college, and right now I'm trying to put together a devotee rock band. And I'll admit, a big part of it is for myself. I like to play the music, I like the energy, I like being on stage. And maybe that's why I've been struggling for 2 years to do it, and it's still not happening. And so the other day I was thinking, you know, I should really try to focus on this offering aspect of being in a band for Krishna. Let me do this in a way that I can actually, through this rock music and playing shows in Gainesville or wherever, I can spread Krishna consciousness energy, or, you know, say a few words here and there in between songs to somehow elevate the consciousness, or play at a festival where, you know, those who are into that kind of music can maybe come to a festival and realize, wow, these Krishnas, they know how to rock out. So that's something where myself, I'm struggling a little bit with this, and I'm trying to really focus on how can I make this a service for others. Can you pass the mic in the back? In the corner, right? Did you have a question? Yes, comment.
I just was remembering a pastime, because I used to be Catholic before, you know, I joined the devotees, and I was reading all the stories of the saints, and I remember a story of a saint in 1500, the name was Santa Teresita in Spanish, Spanish, and she was a very high advanced devotee, because she was even feeling symptoms of ecstasy. She was falling down on the ground, and when she was feeling, you know, such symptoms, she was trying to hide that symptoms, you know, because even it's also being humble, you know, when we feel some kind of advance, we try to hide, because it's very important to be humble. And then she used to chant in the church, has a chorus, everybody sings together. She had a beautiful voice, and she was feeling sometimes a sensation of being proud, and she was saying, "I can be proud. I can, you know, I had to don't feel this." So she was praying. She was praying. She was asking to the Lord, "Help me. I don't want to feel it. You know, I don't want." So I suppose I came in my mind that remembering that she was praying.
Yeah. Pride is so sneaky. You know, it's actually a very, very difficult anartha to control. Because
you may be engaging in the spiritual process. And yes, like you're saying, you know, you're studying the scriptures, and now all of a sudden, here comes pride. The more I've learned, now I'm proud of it. Or, you know, you may be in the temple room and feeling emotional for Krishna sincerely, and just 2 seconds later, you may think, oh, maybe someone is seeing me feeling so emotional and become proud of it. So it's, yeah, very difficult. Once I was having a meal with two devotee friends of mine, and I often get really, maybe overly pumped to get into people's deep relationships with Krishna. So I said, so come on, let's share. What is your most intimate relationship with Krishna? And one of my friends said, wow, kind of putting me on the spot, but he kindly shared. And then the other devotee also shared that his deep relationship was in the worship of his Shila, his daily worship. But he also was saying how, you know, this was very personal, and sometimes, you know, the deep ecstatic feelings that we may have with Krishna are better to be left on our personal level, just between ourselves and Krishna. And I think that really had to do with guarding ourselves against this pride. So, thank you. I think that's a nice example. One more comment or question? Over here.
Hare Krishna, thank you for your class. I'm remembering something that His Holiness Bhakti Tirtha Swami shared about pride. Two things to consider is, one, that something can be taken away from us at any moment. So that's one thing. And the other is that someone else can have the same thing, but to consider that they could be using it better than we are using it. Mm. Yeah, because there was a question put forward that what if we do see that through our efforts and our austerity that we've acquired some wealth or position or internal experience. It's not, maybe we're not seeing it as just mercy, mm-hmm. but that we've actually right. put some effort to acquire something. So yeah. how are we to see that and be humble? So those were the two things, that one, that experience or whatever we acquired can be taken away from us at any moment, and that two, that someone else who has the same thing is probably using it better than we are.
Yeah, thank you. And that third point you're making, that in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, I am the strength of the strong. I am remembrance. So all these abilities that we have, they're actually Krishna's energy. They're not ours. That's helpful. Thank you. Madhuragatmika. Hare Krishna.
Thank you, Prabhu, for a very inspiring class. I've heard, it's a Shastric reference, but I don't have the reference, that one should keep secret or hide their guru, their japa, and their vows. Mm. In other words, we should not use this information for our own aggrandizement.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you very much. Agrisa Shofropa, Srimad Bhagavatam, Aki, Jai.